classified flying object. They have a different abbreviation. But still, there are other reasons than aliens who come to Earth to anally probe us, to knock down cornfields, and to gut cows.
Well, if you haven't seen it, then you can always speculate, but I'm not speculating. I've seen large two orbs right next to each other, and they were orangey. I had binoculars. I was on patrol on the North Shore, 2010, about 9:30 at night, and they were real, okay? And they lit the sky, and also when they went over the shoreline, the land underneath it was a reflection of the orange glow. And it just, I saw it for about maybe less than a minute, and it just disappeared, one after another. And I went on the internet at the time, and other people saw it at other times, other locations in the country. And I looked at it with the binoculars, and there was no details to look at, but it was a solid orange object. And it was quiet, didn't make any noise, and it just disappeared behind a black screen, one after another. So there's some strange things out there, I'm telling you right now.
Okay, Bob, I'll take you at your word. There's strange things out there. There are odd sightings. There have been odd sightings going back decades. Fortunately, no one seems to have any real hard evidence one way or the other for anything substantial. And there are a lot of things that produce optical illusions and misperceptions. And again, there's a lot of experimental gear that people shoot around. A lot of them very expensive and owned by the government, who doesn't want anyone to know about them until we need to know about them. So it's still a mystery. I think it'll continue to be a mystery. I think the government can report as many reports as they want, but it's still going to be a big mystery for many years to come. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for participating tonight. I want to remind everyone that if you want to contact me for either mailbag questions or topics of discussion or share a puzzle that I can then share with the rest of you, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him read a report from NASA or space, my email address is to reach me at mailbag@ac2.com. The link page for a whole bunch of different interesting articles is available on my link page, which is roy.ac2.com. The screen for Limark repeater, W2DL, is the point browser at technet.ac2d.com. And always, Mike KC2NI has a wonderful archive of amateur TechNet going back to December 2006 at a site called amateurradio.tv. That all in mind. And again, a thank you to everyone who participated. I hope you found it interesting and or entertaining. And now I bring you SpaceNet Report and the Fold Up U.S.2N.
Okay, Roy, very good. AC2GS, WS2N. And, I don't have all that much news for this evening. A couple of the new things, but so many projects are being delayed lately. That tends to happen at this time of year, in June and July for some reason. And then, you know, once in a while you get a good launch that's something different that's going up. But, sometimes, like in the winter time, last winter, one thing was happening right after the other. But in development, anyway, with JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, with NASA, they've had such success with the helicopter on Mars, Ingenuity, now flown eight different times, and each time the distance keeps getting further and further. They're reaching their maximum. They don't want to fly more than 3 minutes, around 2 minutes or so. But they've managed to get the thing going faster and faster. They're covering many hundreds of feet, 500-600 feet at a time, and then stopping and then making a left turn or a right turn, and then coming straight down to brand new landing locations. When they come down, by the way, they come down around 10 feet above the ground, and then they more or less just drop power. They don't slow the blades down. They just cut it off, and then when it comes down, it hits the ground, and the lake sense that, and it tends to, that shuts everything down. This way they don't, hit one leg and then, tilt over or something. And every landing now, 8 times, has been successful. Each time they're getting pictures, it's now starting to help out our Perseverance, the rover, that, it's looking for different things in different locations, investigating stuff that Perseverance can't really get to. And they'll keep doing this, it looks like, for many more months to come. It was only going to go 5 flights, that's it. They were going to cut it off no matter what. But it's been so good. They've gone on, and now they're up to 8 flights. And it's not stopping ingenuity. I mean, first 5 flights, it was dedicated to the rover, to the helicopter. Including, very soon, they're going to be core boring the first piece that will be eventually put into a test tube type of canister and eventually left behind on the surface of Mars. They'll know the exact location of it, and a couple of years from now, they'll send another rover up, a sample return mission, go and collect all these pieces, maybe 20 up to 40 pieces that will be eventually laid out on the surface of Mars. But Ingenuity, like I was saying, is doing so good that Jet Propulsion Laboratory is now working on a 6-blade copter, a hectocopter they call it, which will have 6 big blades. And it'll be able to carry much more weight. Right now, the thing only weighs 4 pounds long. On Mars, it's probably about, maybe a pound and a half. The whole thing would be about 4 pounds. This is going to be a bigger one for us, but the weight that it will carry will be 30 grams. That'd be 30 kilograms, which is 50, 60 pound unit that will be able to fly. They'll be able to put a lot more test instruments, for actually doing science on it, instead of just a couple of cameras. That's what Ingenuity has, one camera looking down for navigation and the other one looking out for on the horizon. The one looking down is black, on the horizon is color. So it's good to find out that eventually they'll do that. Right now they have a planned 5 flight for the helicopter to go up. The next flight would be a couple of years from now, which would be the sample return mission 4 years from now. So that's being planned. And from what I've been reading, they will not have a helicopter attached to that mission. That one is more complicated than I could possibly imagine. It's going to land on the surface of Mars. You're going to have a rover a smaller rover that's going to be a lot faster and more maneuverable, but much smaller than Perseverance. And its main job will be to go around and collect all these canisters, all these test tube-like pieces of that Perseverance will left on the surface of Mars, collect them all, put them in that carriage unit will be eventually put inside a rocket that's being developed by Northrop Grumman. That's it's a solid fuel rocket. It's actually a 2-stage rocket. So when it lands, you know, they'll release the rover, and then when the rover goes back to the lander, you know, the rocket will be waiting for it. It'll put the canister inside the rover. That thing's going to take off. Like I said, 2-stage rocket, go to orbit around Mars, and then eventually find the spacecraft that was launched completely independent from this one by the European Space Agency, and it will dock with that, and then that will transfer the canister with all these test sample pieces into the orbiter. The orbiter will eventually deorbit Mars and return to Earth. They have plans on having a parachute into the Utah desert. So, quite a few years from now, but that's the ultimate goal, and scientists will be able to get there. All their canisters back, all the test tubes inside of one big canister back. So, put a fan on here for the rig. Not for me, but for the rig. Okay, any questions before I move on? Okay, I know that there was a balloon accident in New Mexico, unfortunately, yesterday, it was, they killed 5 people. I know New Mexico is famous for balloons. They have every year they have, I don't know, hundreds of these balloons that people go up in every year at the same time. But this was part of that. They have a ham station on the site, and there were always the special event station. Years ago, I remember getting a QSL card from that group, turning up with pictures of all these balloons and people going up in it. But there's a project that's on the way that will take off from Florida. Right now it's being constructed in Arizona. And it's called Space Perspective. Perspective is a company that was, they plan on launching a helium balloon, maybe the size of a stadium, you know, it's just massive balloon, which will eventually take up a capsule with up to 6 or 8 people in it. And it will fly, they call it to the edge of space, but you know, it'll go up 18 miles, you know, 18 miles high, where people will be able to look at the curvature and all of that. And they plan on charging people $125,000 each to do this. You know, it's a sealed cabin, pressurized, and when it comes down, it'll be in the Atlantic Ocean. So it'll take off from Florida. And after it lands, the boat will pick it up, and your ride will be over. I mean, they on this probably, I guess I've been looking at years. The company was started by Jane Poynter from Collins. They're married. But if you go back to 1990s, early 1990s, there was a project in Arizona called GIT-2. The idea there was to have many acres of this building completely enclosed, you know, glass ceilings. You know, you put 4 people in here, in that room, 4 or 6 people at a time. And the idea was to stay there for 2 years. And it was completely sealed. It was its own biosphere. So it had its own lake. It had its own weather. It was, you know, massive thing. They grew their own food. They had animals there, made their own power. And that was the deal. And then, you know, they eventually completed it. And one of the people, Jane Poynter, who eventually married one of the people that were there, Tabitha McCollum, when they left there. And that I'm talking about now, which would eventually have a balloon going in space. But if you ever get a chance to read this one book by Jane Poynter, it's a really good book. All about that biosphere project. It's really fascinating what went on. People there, politics behind it, the money behind it. It's called the Human Experiment, 2 years and 20 minutes inside Biosphere 2. And it's very well written. You know, she was there, she wrote this whole thing. But, you know, with this company, you know, that they started with the company, you know, they actually have another space company that actually does contracts with NASA, help with equipment with the EVA suits. They've done different contracts. But there's other things like a spinoff building this capsule, carry 6 to 8 people up to the edge of space, I guess. And it would be a lot less expensive. You know, $125,000 a seat instead of the $250,000 that Richard Branson wants to fly people in the Unity vehicle, the Spaceship 2, that truly will go into space. That will go, up to the Kármán line or beyond. Kármán line being 100 kilometers from. This thing will be going up, you know, let's go 20 miles. But, from what I understand, it'll be a very long ride. It's going to take a long time for you to get all the way up to altitude in a balloon and then all the way back down again. Originally, they planned on cutting this thing loose, the capsule loose, and it had a parasail system on it that was going to open up and it was going to guide itself back and land on land. But I guess they've scrapped that idea. I remember that years ago, like I said, 10, 15 years ago. Now it looks like you're going to come down. I guess the balloon slowly deflate, and I guess you're going to wind up in the sea. Any questions? This is WS2N, SpaceNet Report. Okay, was launch last Friday. In the morning, around 9, a little after 9 o'clock in the morning, from Wallops Island, Virginia. Of course, not too far from here. They launched, different rockets from that spaceport. Named Mars. It's an acronym. But anyway, that spaceport at Wallops Island, Virginia, launched Cygnus spacecraft with the Antares rocket to the Advent. That's a big rocket that goes up every now and then to resupply the space station. It also launches the Minotaur 1, which launched just a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, it launched a Minotaur 5 rocket, a bigger rocket, 10 years ago, from the same island, from Wallops Island, that sent the spacecraft to the moon. And so they do a lot of launches. But one of the ones I always like to see is the Rock-On launches. Rock-On is a group of students in universities from around the country that put together experiments. And in this case, this launch that went up Friday, I think it was at least 40 experiments from hundreds of students around the country that contributed. So some of them are CubeSat types of things. Anyway, it's a suborbital flight, so it doesn't go into orbit. But, sometimes they'll go up, 600-700 miles and come back down. This one went up around 73, I think, miles, not that high. And they have all these different experiments on board. And it comes back down with a parachute, and they pick it up in the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. But they launch on this Orion rocket. Terrier is the first stage south rocket that they use, and then it shifts over to the Orion, also a smaller rocket, but, quite powerful. And they've been doing this for years, but they call it Rock-On, so good name. In other words, Rocket On. Well, this is Rock On. Anyway, somebody always used to check into this net. I haven't heard of him in a while. Mike, I forgot his call from from Connecticut to record all these nuts for us and help us out with emails. Maybe Roy remembers. We always had Mike from New Jersey that recorded everything, and then we also had Mike from Connecticut. He was the phone mic number two, but a very helpful guy. Anyway, he was involved with Rock On quite a bit. He would go down with, I guess, one of the universities to watch these things take off. I know he's done it at least once, maybe twice. You know, he gave us a report about it. It sounds pretty exciting. Imagine being off from a wild silence. Anyway, they do this, and they plan on doing it again not too long from now. With a different experiment. I tend to follow this, and they get results back and reports on it, and some of the stuff goes on, and they develop further experiments that eventually go up to either different satellites or maybe up to the International Space Station. Let me drop it for any questions. WS2M. Okay, nothing heard. Okay, the Starliner. I've talked about this. This is like, it's old news. Starliner is being built by Boeing, and it's supposed to eventually send crews up to four at a time to the space station, to the International Space Station. So two Decembers ago, they launched the first one from Florida, and without a crew, and the goal was to dock at the space station, spend a couple of weeks there, undock, and then come back down and land, not in the water, but on land in White Sands, New Mexico. You know, they have these airbags, to come down through the atmosphere, heat shield, parachutes, and then it gets very close to the ground, and then these airbags, six big airbags, open up right before you hit the ground, and it softens the impact with the last couple of feet. So they wanted to test this out two Decembers ago, and it got it into orbit, and then they had problems with it. There was some kind of a mismatch between the computer on board and the computers on the ground that said where the thing is supposed to be. Space, so it was a timing thing. The timing was off. The computer on the spacecraft, or it was slightly different time than where it was supposed to be. So to compensate for it, the spacecraft started using its thrusters and trying to push itself to where it thought it should be in space. By doing that, it used up a lot of fuel, and NASA managed to shut it down before it lost all its fuel. But by that time, it was too late. Not enough fuel to get up to the space station to do what it had to do. So they decided to bring it back. Sure enough, it landed properly in New Mexico, in White Sands, New Mexico. All autonomously, no problem doing that. But, they had some other problems, too. They realized that the service module would disconnect from the spacecraft itself right before it deorbits. had some kind of a computer's glitch with that too, where they were worried that the two might actually bump into each other after they separated. So they fixed all of that over a year now. Like I said, two Decembers ago. Sure enough, they're going to send it up again on July 30th. So that's coming up end of July. So I'm looking forward. I hope that makes it to the space station, because if it does, they'll be able to bring it back down, and then there's another one being prepared, and then that will give them the okay to start sending crews up to the space station. So we'll have two vehicles go to the space station from the United States. Yeah, the Starliner from Boeing, and of course the Dragon, which is doing that now. It's already brought three different crews to the space station, so they're way ahead. I mean, it was awarded the money to do this around the same time. It was kind of like a competition who was going to make it to the space station. Naturally, SpaceX won. But we'll see if this makes it. It'll stay there. It'll attach until August. We'll be bringing up only around 400 pounds of supplies to the space station. It's not really meant as a cargo vehicle. Meant as a crew transport vehicle. And then, you know, even when you do have a crew go up, it'll still only bring up, you know, 300-400 pounds worth of stuff. So, you know, we have plenty of cargo vehicles that go to the space station, so not to worry there. But it'll be good to see if this thing makes it through its paces. Launching from Florida, from Launch Complex 41, and they use an Atlas rocket. They don't use the Falcon 9 rocket that SpaceX used the Falcon 9 rocket. It has one big, actually it's a Russian engine, RD-180 engine. Liquid oxygen, liquid kerosene on its main, you know, on its core stage. And then it does have two solid boosters attached to it. They're around 5 feet in diameter. And they're made by now Northrop Grumman. And so they'll be attached to the... they'll separate, then eventually the core will shut down with the RD-180 Russian engine. And that separates, and then you have the second stage with two RL-10 engines. They've been around for decades. So they're pretty... You know, most of the flights that have gone up only had one, but now with the crew, they're going to have two on stage. And that's liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So they've had no problems with getting to space. The problem is after it separates, after the star liner having the problem getting to the space station. Once they do that, that'll be very good. Because, you know, any one of these vehicles could have a problem. You know, either the boost, whatever reason, and then, you know, they put them on the side for a couple. You always need, you know, plan B. So if, let's say, Falcon 9 is having a problem, you'll have the Atlas V to, and the Starliner to still launch crews to the space station. You know, right now we have 7 people on board the space station. You know, 4 that went up with the last Dragon vehicle, and the other 3 are from the Russian Soyuz vehicle. Humankind now has 10 people in orbit. We now have a second space station by China. China has launched their crew about 2 weeks ago now. The three-person crew to their space station, and then there for 3 months. That'll be a continual rotation. They'll eventually start rotating crews on a regular basis. Up with for 6 months instead of 3 months. This one's up there for 3. So they'll come back and they'll have standard 6 month rotation with their crew. So I guess that anybody being born today will be able to say, you know, as far as they know, there's always been at least 10 people flying around in Earth's orbit, and hopefully that goes on for a long time. I know the space station is supposed to last now until 2030. And it's in such good shape, I wouldn't be surprised if they could just go beyond that. Besides, it would be a heck of a thing to deorbit. You know, they know how to do it, but nobody wants to. Any questions or comments? Okay, nothing hard. There was a third EVA that completed to install these new solar panels. They call them IROSAs, IROSA, International Space Station Roll Out Solar Array, or, you know, ROSA. So about a week or so ago, they two astronauts went out to install one of the roll-out solar array systems. There's eventually going to be 6 of them. They did one, and then they eventually did the second one last, actually Friday. You know, Shane Kimbrough, you know, he's a ham, KE5HOD. and NASA and Tomas Piquet, KG5, FYG, comes out of European Space Agency, out of France. The two of them went out and successfully installed the second set of rollout solar arrays in the space station. These things are designed to supplement the space station. SETNET, they're putting out there, it's like 20 kilowatts of energy. Like, you got a couple of generators for your house, like, you know, be the equivalent of running like five generators. And I think each of that, so they produce a lot of power. The idea is to upgrade the International Space Station from its standard 160 kilowatts to around 205 or more, 205 kilowatts. And they're in the process of doing that. The full battery was created years ago, and was successful. Many successful EVAs to do that. They got rid of the old batteries that were very heavy, around 400 pounds each. Now these came up, built by Japan, about the same amount of weight, but you don't need as many. They're half the size. So, you know, and they have lithium ion instead of nickel hydrogen batteries. They both opened and installed a total of 48 that they had to remove. 2-to-1 ratio, so they installed 24. And that's giving them the same amount of amp hours. So there's no loss. The time is marched on. You know, the original nickel hydrogen was designed, you know, before the space station went up. And started going up in, 1998. And repeat the timeout. They started going up in 1998, and this technology has moved on, so now we use lithium-ion batteries, which is a tremendous amount of power. Of course, you need that when the solar panels from the sun is feeding the power of the space station and charging the batteries at the same time. Then they go into darkness, and the batteries take over. So, because it's every 90 minutes they go around the Earth, that's every 90 minutes you have a charge-decharge cycle. Batteries are really sturdy, handling thousands of recharges, you know, over the years, almost 15 years. That's the story on that. That was very successful, and they plan on doing it again, not too soon. Because it was Friday night, it was good. I'm glad they didn't do it on Saturday and Sunday. A repeater system on board the space station. But, you know, they just shut the whole ham radio down on the Russian side as well. And they pulled the antenna too. They don't want any static charges or anything built up on the outside of the space station when they're doing an EVA. Of course, that was Friday. I guess they didn't have a problem. They probably reconnected everything before the field day. So that's the story with that. Any comments? WS2N. GXM. Ed.
Paul's WB2GXM. I was curious about the type of lithium batteries they're using. Have they progressed to using lithium iron batteries, or even the next generation is coming up from China? I forget what they're called.
Yeah, I read that they were the lithium ions, not the lithium polymers. I'll have to search to confirm that, but I believe that that was what they were when they were doing that for the last who knows how many years. Each one is as big as a suitcase. They're huge. Sort of picked them up if they were on Earth. Naturally, they move them around easily in space. They would send up like 9 at a time on a Japanese cargo vehicle, the HTV vehicle. They would attach it to the, you know, they would attach a cargo vehicle to the Unity node. They don't go. The robotic arm grabs a hold of them. They're that big, and the robot, you know, the arm takes them and they store them on a platform. Yeah. Eventually, the robot arm starts pulling the old batteries out, storing them on a platform and putting these in. Then they had astronauts go over to put all the jumpers in. for a while, they'd have to move a battery around or something like that. But yeah, as far as I know, they're the lithium ion. Back to you.
All right, thank you, Paul. WB2GXM.
Yeah, don't quote me on it. I mean, it's possible that they just called it that, and then maybe they will lithium polymer. I'll find it usually a PDF file, you know, some long involved file from NASA, and you know, I'll read that to confirm it instead of just like the news report. Just like the old batteries are called nickel hydrogen, so you know, we call the old batteries here nickel hydrate batteries. They're not, these were nickel hydrogen batteries. They're totally different. Very strange kind of battery that was on there. You know, it could charge, and there would be a tremendous amount of pressure inside these battery things. It could sell 100 pounds of square inches, some raw number. Then they would discharge, and they would charge it over and over again. And they really held their own for 15 years. Nickel hydrogen batteries, they used them on a lot of satellites too, deep space satellites, you know, to tell me they were very reliable. Any other questions? Let the CW go by. Okay, great. I operate a lot of stations here. 1D, right? A lot of fun. The states, a lot of people from Pennsylvania, Canada. I was only doing the two bands, so 40 meters and 80 meters. A lot of fun. All three W. I wanted to mention the Hubble before I close. Hubble is shut down for a while now. It's probably 3 or 4 weeks. What happens is they have, you know, multiple computers on board Hubble. Some of them backups. Apparently, the primary payload computer, which its job is to, you know, tell all its instruments, okay, it's your turn to do this, or your turn to do that, or tell the thrusters, tell the gyros to move, we're going to move this Hubble one way or another. That computer had failed. So they have these memory chips, you know, that are on board, 64K each. You got to remember, this is made, I think it was launched in 1990, so the memory cards are only, you know, there's four of them, and they really only use one. So they thought maybe something was wrong with that, but they worked on it, and they found out it wasn't. So they do have a backup battery, computer that they can switch over to. I think they're in the process of doing that. They were thinking, well, maybe it's a CPU. So temporarily they did switch over to some other system, and they're starting to believe maybe it's not a CPU. They're trying to narrow it down, so I'm not sure what it is. They do have a flash memory on board. They thought maybe that was it, but I'm not sure. Anyway, they can't, yeah, all the instruments are, you know, are in a safe mode. But right now they can't direct anything until they figure out what to do. Backup computer, they haven't ever used. And I believe it was installed on the last service mission, which was mine. I remember during that mission, they said, if we get another 7 years out of Hubble, we'll be happy, you know. And here it is, you know, 2021, so. And we're up to, like, you know, 22 years of your service instead of 7 years after the last service mission. And it doesn't look like there's any service missions that are going to go there. You really needed the space shuttle. I mean, there was talk one time that maybe they could use another vehicle like Dragon, but there's no plan on doing that right now. They seem to think that, you know, they'll work this out. They have enough redundancy on Hubble to maybe get this thing back working again. But if it is one computer that has failed, that means there is no more backup after this one. So sooner or later, it could come to a grinding halt. Yeah, they hope that James Webb Space Telescope will be launched by then, but that delays the years I remember. That was supposed to be up in 2017. They've had delay after delay, and I think recently they're having a problem with the bearing on their rocket that's supposed to launch. It's called the Ariane 5 rocket. Now launches out of French Guiana. European Space Agency is launching the American James Webb Space Telescope for us. That in a way is their contribution to get science back. But, you know, they offered to launch that for nothing. Can't get it off the ground. They seem to have a problem with the fairing. Last mission weren't happy with the results when it opened up, and they don't want to have any problems with James Webb, especially. You know, it's like a $10 billion piece of equipment that they plan on putting up into the L2 position, a million miles out from Earth. It's not going to be serviceable. Not like Hubble. They spent, you know, many hours servicing that thing. They spent five different service missions. James Webb goes up to Lagrange Point 2. That's it. It's all over. No more service missions. Ever. What are you going to do? Anyway, I'm going to turn it back over to Roy. I'm grinding clothes at the end of the presentation that I have. We'll be on tomorrow night on the ClubNet. ClubInfoNet. That's on 8:30 and it's repeated. And then we always have the, Weimark always has the, followed by Newsline. I think later on in the week, hopefully they have the knowledge in that again. I think that's Wednesday, coming Wednesday. That's not on that often. There you go. Back over to you, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N. For the SpaceNet report for the TechNet.
AC2GS, thank you so much, Paul, WS2N. SpaceNet report for all that you do for us here. I just want to add that the other mic is K1MJM. He's in Connecticut. He hasn't updated his website, which is LimarkTechNet.com. It looks like 3-4 years. Nothing that dates it past that point. But the website is still there. A little comment about the nickel hydrogen battery. Nickel metal hydride uses a positive element that is nickel oxyhydrogen. So the hydrogen is bound to the nickel chemically, whereas a nickel hydrogen battery uses both elemental nickel and the gas hydrogen under pressure. As you mentioned, I think that 1,200 pounds per square inch of pressure in the hydrogen cell. So they're dramatically different battery technologies, although they use similar elements.
Yes, they are. And can you give me my call one more time, please?
Yes, it is Kilo-1-MJM.
Kilo-1, Mike, Juliet, Mike, yeah, that rings a bell, okay. Kilo-1, not November-1, right?
Yes, it's Kilo-1. Again, the website is exactly as I remember it about 4 years ago.
Where do you call it? Was it LimarkTechNet.com?
Yes, it's www.LimarkTechNet.com.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I know I put an article on that. I'll go look to see if it's still there. Years ago, all about Dragon, when it was being developed, the Crew Dragon. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Well, again, thank you, Paul, and thanks to everyone who participated tonight. As I've often said, a technical mess with no participants is a not very interesting experience. And no one wants to hear me just babble by myself. I like to hear me babble with other people. But thank you for participating. Thank you for participating in the puzzle. I appreciated that. And as always, want to remind people that if you would like to contact me before next week, for mailbag questions, for topics of discussion, to offer me some puzzles to share with others, or to poke a pool on the shoulder
that
and
time,
to
complete.
Take a look at some space-related websites. The email address to reach me is mailbag@act.com. Again, mailbag@act.com. The link page with a lot of interesting articles. At your leisure, take a look at it. Just type into your browser, roy.act2gs.com. And remember that my KC2NJI has a great archive of the technical nets to go all the way back to September of 2006. So avail yourself of that. There's a lot of wisdom from a lot of, unfortunately, hams that have gone on to be silent keys, but their advice remains in audio form on Mike's website. So take a listen. And if you're interested in listening to an audio stream of Limark's repeater, I'll try as best I can to maintain it. Just point your browser at technet.ac2gs.com, and most of the time you'll be able to hear Limark's repeater. So once again, want to thank everyone. Please come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. where we'll try and do it all over again. As I've repeatedly done, I remind you of Dick, K2RIW, used to end his technical net with something along the lines of be kind to each other. This is good advice in general. It's excellent advice during these terrible days of the COVID virus. Things are getting better. Things will continue better. And just be safe and be smart about it, and we'll all get to the other end of this tunnel. So, this is AC2GS, and the Limark TechNet is formally closed, and I am formally clear. Till next time, guys. Have a safe week.
N2VHC Mobile, November 2, Victor Hotel, Mobile listening. November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu Mobile, monitoring.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Next tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning, sir. Time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
AA2TC.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2. W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Long time no see.
Well, not since Saturday, anyway. How'd you make out?
Not bad. Not bad, and just heading over to see my grandson. You know? One of those days, take him to the park and have a little fun with him, because the weekend was kind of taken up, and I try to get over there almost every day.
That's great. Yeah, they really appreciate it. Getting out and having fun in the park. Yep. Wish I had more time to send my grandson, but he's 9 now. Time flies.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I still remember my grandparents. they were, you know, they were a good part of my life in the early days before they passed. And, you know, it's just something that you want your grandchildren to remember you. And this is the time when it's important. So there you go on that one. Anyway, enough of me being like that. And right now I'm just passing through Baldwin. This is N2 Iowan.
I know, that's the most important thing in life. You know, kids and grandkids, you know, they're what it's all about. And we're very fortunate that there's a million places we can take them to and things we can expose them to.
Yeah, well, you know, because of COVID, we couldn't bring anybody under 18 to Field Day. And usually I try to bring my kids or my grandkids or what have you, you know. Well, at least we'll be able to bring them to the picnic.
Absolutely. Nothing like a picnic. I remember Grumman and Fairchild when they would have, you know, their family picnics. They're always a lot of fun. And Grumman always went all out.
Well, you know, Grumman had unlimited pockets. But Limark does a good job. We have a nice picnic, and we're just trying to come up with some ideas for kids, you know, to interest them in whatever we're going to do. So that's it. Everything else is pretty much written in stone already, and it's only another, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 7 weeks before the picnic, so we've got to get everything rocking and rolling, so to speak. And to Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, things really come up quickly, and before you know it, you know, you wait all winter. Winter seems like it's 12 months long by itself. Summer just flies by.
Boy, is that true. Is that true. Summer does fly by, and it's, you know, it's the best time of the year. Because you can do everything outdoors and so on and so forth. You know, if I lived in Florida, it would be summer all year round, but here it's not. So, and all the things that I always say about New York, like, it doesn't pay to own a pool, because in New York, you only get to use it for basically 3 months. And, you know, so... But we can get outdoors and we can do a lot of things in the warm weather, which makes it beautiful. Like I'm going to take my grandson to the park today, and I'm sure he's going to have a ball there. He always does.
Maybe you can, H. Well, you have fun. I just arrived at Belmont Park, State Park. Got to fix a copy here. You have a good day, Jeff. Katie Sukanich, 373.
Hey, always a pleasure, Charlie. You have a good one. I'll talk to you later. N2 Iowan.
Have a good day, Charlie. N2 that you say. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ronnie. Hey, did you ever get to hook up with anybody on the air?
Excluding Limark. He said that they heard me. Tony N2 ICC was trying to help me initially to find a frequency. First, he gave me a 20-meter frequency. It was all noise. Then I said, I take 10, 12, 17, 15, whatever you got. Then he gave me a 10-meter frequency, and I could hear them just barely. And there were stations that were making contact with them. They were much louder. And I called them several times, and then on 2 meters, he said, hey, they heard you. But it technically wasn't a good kind of contact. I didn't put it in my book or my log.
All right. Stuff happens, you know. And when you contacted me, I was not near any radios at the time. I had left Tony over at the 20-meter station with somebody else who wanted to operate, and I just relinquished my seat and let him operate, you know, of course. So he was a new ham also. So that was a good thing. And I don't know. I didn't think 20 meters was so good this weekend. Not at all. Maybe it's because we only had non-resonant wires up, or I don't know, we didn't have the beams up like we usually do. Hopefully next year we go back to beams, because honestly I have no interest in non-resonant wires that really don't do the job that well.